Hello and welcome to another episode of the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Han, and you've probably heard some news floating around that the UK might be going to war with Spain over Gibraltar. Confused how we got here? Don't worry, because we brought on Joe Duggan from Spain's biggest expat newspaper, the Olive Press, to shed some light on the situation. He also chatted to Tim about how the predominantly Remain territory feels about Brexit now that Article 50 has been signed into effect, and what the odds of Gibraltar's own independence referendum are. If you enjoy the show and you want to hear more Brexit-related news like this, you can subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast, or find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast and at brexitpodcast.com.
And now I'm joined by Joe Duggan of the Olive Press. I wanted to get somebody on to talk about what's happening in Gibraltar a couple of weeks ago, because the biggest Remain vote at 95.9% of all the 382 voting areas. But in the past few days, things have really kicked off over there, Joe. How are you getting on?
Yeah, that's the right word, kicked off. Obviously, no one expected that bombshell, really, that the European Council dropped on Friday. And ever since then, it's just been one thing after another, really. I mean, Michael Howard's, I would suggest, ill-advised comment about Britain possibly going to war obviously has taken up a lot of newspaper columns and inches. But I think in a way it kind of detracted from the real story, which is what the European Council inserted this clause 22 into their draft guidelines, which is basically giving Spain an effective veto over Gibraltar being included in any trade deal that the UK strikes. So
yeah, let's just remind people a second. So I've got it here in front of me. After the United Kingdom leaves the Union, no agreement between the EU and the United Kingdom may apply to the territory of Gibraltar without the agreement between the Kingdom of Spain and the United Kingdom. So that was the thing that lit the blue touch paper, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the European Council basically said there that on one particular issue, which is the issue of Gibraltar, Britain has to negotiate bilaterally with Spain, and they've not specified that anywhere else in the document. So that's a big move, and Spain have clearly been lobbying very hard to get that put in behind the scenes, and it's taken everyone very much by surprise. And I mean, the talk here is of betrayal, really, by the EU. I mean, nobody voted in greater numbers than the Gibraltarians to remain in the EU, in the UK, and yet they've been sort of sold out, really, is what people are saying, by the inclusion of that clause.
Yeah, so when you say they've been sold out, who have they been sold out? Who sold them out?
Well, they think the EU has sold them out. I mean, Fabian Picardo attacked Donald Tusk quite quickly after the after that draft guideline was published.
He's your first minister, isn't he?
Yeah, chief minister, yeah. And people here just expected a little bit more. It's like that they feel like they've been sort of singled out, and that, Spain are getting handed a sort of a free run on what's gonna happen to Gibraltar.
Picardo said, Gibraltar's not a bargaining chip in these negotiations. Gibraltar belongs to the Gibraltarians, and we want to stay British. So, I mean, he's pretty clear. He's pretty clear on it, isn't he? I mean, we're talking now on a Tuesday. This goes out on a Thursday. But after you mentioned Michael Howard weighing in, saying Britain would defend Gibraltar in the same way as Maggie Thatcher defended the Falklands in '82, which he's been heavily criticised for over here. But, that sentiment, I mean, the Sun ran with this very subtle headline today, Up Yours, Signors, which I've noticed.
Yeah, we saw that.
I noticed you also ran that on the Olive Press website, or at least you ran that the Sun were running with that story. And there's a post inside, hands off our rock.
Yeah, I mean, people here are appreciative that it is getting picked up back at home. And I mean, even Michael Howard's comments, a lot of people sort of appreciate the fact that somebody's sticking up for them, even though, there's I think people really in the bottom of their hearts, but, you know, they obviously don't want to see a war, but finally it appears Gibraltar is registering in the minds of the British people back home. And, you know, perhaps the Remain campaign, I personally think they should have done more to put it on the agenda in the run up to the referendum, but there you go, that's gone and passed now. So,
well, I mean, it has gone and passed, but given in Gibraltar it was such a heavily, as we said before, 95.9% Remain, the morning after the EU referendum result must have been greeted by shock, wouldn't it? I'd have thought. Did people feel let down by the rest of Britain?
Yes, they did. I mean, I was in the university, which was the place where they did count in Gibraltar that night. Gibraltar was the first place to call in their results in the whole of Britain. Obviously, it was 96% to Remain, no surprise there. But by sort of 1:30 in the morning, I think Farage had declared, and it was looking like it was a win for Remain. And I actually sort of cycled back from the university, got back to La Linea, where I live in Spain. And in that 30 minutes, Sunderland had declared, and it was clear that we were looking at different results together. So obviously things progressed from there. David Cameron resigned, and pretty soon after that, the then Spanish Foreign Minister, his name is José Manuel García Margallo, who is not a well-loved man in this part of the world, he said that the Spanish flag was closer to being planted on the Rock of Gibraltar. Now, this is the morning after the referendum.
Okay.
And then immediately there was these inflammatory remarks coming from Madrid. And I went into Gibraltar that morning and spoke to people in the street. And people were angry. They respected the sort of democratic will of the British people. But there was anger, really, that Madrid was suddenly trying to get its claws into Gibraltar once again.
Yeah, because the people of Gibraltar have been very adamant in the past. When Jack Straw was the Labour Foreign Secretary, the 2002 referendum asking if you wanted to share sovereignty with Spain, that was rejected by 99% to 1%. So
yes,
people are
right.
Pretty clear that they wanted to be part of the EU, but they also wanted to have British sovereignty retained. And I guess that mood's not changed much in the past 15 years.
No, it hasn't, but I mean, Gibraltar's wants to keep... The main issue for Gibraltar now is the border. Obviously, the British sovereignty, they will steadfastly behind being British. The issue then is the border. That has to be kept open, and the sort of cards are with the Spanish government really on that one, because
do you say,
it
has to be kept open?
Yeah, there's 12,000 cross-border workers cross over the border every day, and without that, the economy here would be in trouble. And not only the economy here, the economy in Andalusia, the economy in La Linea, which is the town next door, which has like 40% unemployment, would be very badly harmed. So if Madrid wanted to go down that road, then they're not going to just be hurting Gibraltar, they'd be hurting their own people as well. So,
and what's the...
What they do.
Yeah, I mean, is there a prevailing feeling that what the Spanish government might do or what might happen to the border? And it's interesting we talk about the hard border there, because we've talked about the hard border quite a lot on the podcast between the North and the Republic of Ireland. But Gibraltar's been forgotten, I think, very much by everyone in that border there for probably for the past year, nearly.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing everyone talks about. It would be the real nuclear option from the Madrid government to close the border, because, like I say, they really would be harming their own people. And now, there's once the UK's out of the EU, Spain is now looking at being sort of the third power, really, in the EU. So a move like that, it wouldn't look good on them at all. It wouldn't be the sort of actions of a democratic country, really.
So Theresa May, who tried to dumb down calm down, I should say, Michael Howard's words, by saying it, echoing Winston Churchill saying it should be more jaw, not war. I mean, that's probably the sentiment, that's prevailing sentiment in your part of the world at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Howard said what he said, and like I say, that's kind of taken over the headlines a bit more than the European Council's announcement. But not obviously, no one wants to go to war. I mean, the people here don't have a problem with Spain. They have a problem with the PP government, the right-wing Spanish government. I mean, La Linea and Gibraltar has very close ties. You know, you've got family members living in Spain, who or family members living in Gibraltar, so people get on here and understand one another. So there's not that problem. That the issue is with the sort of constant sort of anti-Gibraltarian sentiment that emanates from the Madrid government. So that's what people have a problem with here.
And why is that? Is that because they don't like they feel that Gibraltar should be part of Spain and not under British rule? Is that where it stems from?
Yeah, I mean, they disagree with the Treaty of Utrecht that gave Gibraltar to the British. Different administrations have adopted different stances, but the current one is very sort of belligerent towards Gibraltar. You know, the last foreign minister was particularly aggressive in his stance. The current one, Alfonso Dastes, he's much more measured in his tones. He's a diplomat, but it remains to be seen how they're going to play their cards now. I mean, obviously they've been given this effective veto by the EU, so it's going to be up to them, I guess, if these draft guidelines are adopted. Spain's holding a lot of the cards here, so.
So this, what does this effective veto really mean? I've seen reports that suggest that Spain would push for the end to the low tax status, ban on international airlines, and get rid of the Royal Navy from the area. I mean, what's your thoughts on what the veto would mean?
Well, they could exclude Gibraltar from any sort of final deal that the UK does, and Gibraltar wants to be part of any final trade deal that the UK secures, but if the Spanish want, according to what the European Council have said, they can say, well, the UK can have that, but Gibraltar can't. So, you know, that's obviously going to be bad for Gibraltar, because it wants to maintain these close ties with the UK, and that could have serious repercussions for their economy.
Yeah, so no deal. Worse than a bad deal.
Yeah, that was Theresa May's words.
It was something, yeah. And the thing with Gibraltar, it's an incredibly popular place, isn't it, to reside. I mean, it's one of the most densely populated areas in the world. 32,000 inhabitants as of, I think, last year, perhaps, or the 2012 consensus. But it's a very mixed, people coming from all sorts of mixed backgrounds. 24% of Spanish origin, lots of sort of Gibraltarians, 13% sort of British proper, as it's termed, Italian, Portuguese, Moroccans. You know, Indians there as well. People generally getting on well.
It's an incredibly cosmopolitan area. I mean, you've got one of the biggest Jewish communities sort of per capita outside of Israel. You've got a big Muslim community, a big Hindu community, obviously a big Catholic community, so it's just everyone mixes very well. You know, it's a very sort of well integrated community.
And what drives it, Joe?
What drives the
local economy?
Gaming, online gaming is a big factor here. There's a big insurance industry here. There's lots of law firms here, but I'd say online gaming, there's probably 5,000 to 6,000 people working in that industry, so that's a big factor here.
Yeah, because one of your writers, Charles Gomez, wrote a piece saying it's an international commercial, financial and transportation hub, but he also said you were great at complaining, so is that fair?
My friend, the English are quite good at that, aren't they? So
yeah, well, true.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big port as well. It's got quite a sort of diverse economy, and they've had these sort of concerns and sort of problems to deal with over the ages, really. And they've always proved themselves quite a resourceful entrepreneurial community. So they've always reacted well in moments of adversity. So, and this is just another one of those at the minute. So, you know, Gibraltar's always bounced back pretty well. So,
and you were saying just a few hours ago there was a gunboat or something that popped up.
Yeah, there was a Spanish gunboat, the Infanta Cristina, made its way into British Gibraltar territorial waters, and the Royal Navy had to sort of chase it off, basically. So these sorts of things, they're not uncommon, but it's sort of raised a few eyebrows, really, that this happened today. It was, you know, quite a large vessel that was sent down. The Spanish don't recognise that the British have their own waters, so there's quite a lot of these incursions by various boats, fishing boats.
So would that have been a deliberate act of defiance?
Well, I don't know that, but it's obviously, you know, it seems strange that it came a couple of days after Michael Howard was saber-rattling. So, I mean, who knows exactly why, if it was linked to that, but like I say, these sort of things have happened in the past. So,
do you think residents feel like pawns in the political process here? I mean, Theresa May didn't give any guarantees about EU citizens in Britain, and likewise, therefore, the European Union didn't really give any guarantees about British citizens abroad, which I suppose extends to mainland Spain, which I know you also cover. I mean, all this posturing, I don't know, what's the general sort of feeling on the street about it?
I mean, it's a horrible word, isn't it, pawns, but that's what everyone kind of is at the minute, not just in Gibraltar, the Brits who live in Spain and the Spanish who live in Britain, it's all being argued over about what's going to happen to them. But at the end of the day, these people are human beings with lives, and it's just millions of them are, their sort of future is completely up in the air at the minute. I mean, we were talking to Giles, Trenley yesterday, who's involved in, you know, trying to get dual nationality for the British in Spain, and he spoke to Barnier, the guy who's chief negotiator for the EU, who told him that basically if Britain fails to secure a final deal with the EU, then the rights of British expats in Spain and Spaniards in the UK or EU nationals in the UK, they'll lose all their rights, basically. So, you know, the hope was that those expats would get their rights secured pretty quickly, but if that doesn't happen, then, and Britain, you know, doesn't get a deal, then they lose everything. So when Theresa May says no deal, it's better than a bad deal, you know, she's wrong.
I guess the one thing this has done is push Gibraltar up the agenda a little bit.
They're
replacing Britain, you know, like Cornwall, for example, that feels that it's potentially really going to struggle. I mean, it has millions in EU funding, yet very little noise has been made about that region.
Yeah.
I guess at least this brings Gibraltar to the forefront.
It is, which is good. I mean, the coverage over the last few days has been extraordinary. It's been all over, obviously, the British paper and the European newspapers, so it's good that it's getting pushed up the agenda, and, you know, hopefully the UK government have been very steadfast in their promises to back Gibraltar, and the fact that it's now firmly on the agenda means that, you know, they're going to have to prioritise, because Spain could obviously block their entire future trade deal, so they they have to prioritise Gibraltar now.
And what sort of character is Fabian Picardo?
What's he like? He's a very good orator. A very clever guy. He's a lawyer, and he's handled the whole Brexit process very well. And immediately after the referendum, he was thinking outside the box about how Gibraltar could possibly stay in the EU. He came up with an idea about how they could possibly renegotiate what the word the United Kingdom meant in EU treaty so that Scotland and Gibraltar could stay in. That didn't work out, but it just showed that he was in the immediate aftermath of Brexit. It didn't seem like there were many politicians that knew what to do, and he was just like stuck in the headlights. Whereas Picardo was very quick off the mark, coming up with some quite good ideas about how Gibraltar might be able to prosper. But like I say, he's a very good orator. I don't know if you've read some of his speeches. He writes a mean speech. So he's a good leader for the Gibraltar people in a difficult time.
Understood.
And he's unstinting he lets Madrid know what he thinks quite clearly, and he's very clear in his approach to their belligerent language that just won't take any notice from them, basically. So,
have there been voices saying, do you know what, we'd just be better off independent from all of this?
I have heard a bit of that recently, but people, they want to stay British. They want to stay part of Britain. So it's not like in Scotland, where there's obviously a very strong independent movement. I've not really heard that here. Obviously, this is a much smaller place than Scotland, so I don't know if that would present its own difficulties, but at the minute, people just want to make sure that Spain doesn't get any sort of sovereignty over the rock, and they keep that sovereignty with Britain. That's the number one sort of priority, really, for them.
Because the rock really is quite small, isn't it? The population's less than 10,000, less than the Faroe Islands, for example.
Yeah, it's 38,000, I think, is the overall population. So yeah, it's tiny. So it's not something I've heard too much from people.
And I suppose that the real big question is, when are the Gibraltar football team going to win a match in the World Cup qualifying?
They've got some good players, you know. They've got a guy called Liam Walker. He's a decent little player, but it's tough. I mean, Lincoln Redding beating Celtic was obviously probably the biggest result, certainly in domestic football, in Gibraltar, but yeah, the national team keep getting hammered, unfortunately. But
yeah, for people uninitiated, they became affiliated to UEFA and they competed in the Euro 2016 qualifying games, but they lost all 10. And they've lost the first 5 of the 2018 campaign for the World Cup campaign. But you've got to start somewhere, haven't you, Joe?
That's right, and they scored a couple of goals. Walker scored a cracker actually against Cyprus. So, but yeah, I mean, there's not obviously a big pool of players to choose from when there's only 30,000 odd people. So that's always going to be a tough one. But
it was Liam Walker, you said.
Yeah, he's.
So
he's,
who does he play for?
He's played for Portsmouth. He played for Lincoln Redimps for a couple of years. He's now at their rivals, Europa. He's a very nifty little player. Plays out on the right, but he's got a left leg, so he's sort of like a playmaker, really. And there's Lee Castellaro, scored against Celtic, scored against Scotland as well for Gibraltar. So he's a good striker. Although a lot of these guys are pushing on a bit now, so we'll have to see what the next generation of players brings through.
And they don't, because they don't always play on the rock itself, do they?
No, they have to play the home games in Faro, in Portugal, because Spain won't let them play there, and the pitch isn't sort of up to the standards required. But they're sort of lobbying FIFA at the minute to try and get that arranged, try and get that sorted out in time. But yeah, at the minute it's a sort of 8-hour round trip to Faro, which is not fair really on the fans, especially and the players, because a lot of the players have to take time off from work to go and play the game. So that's not fair on anyone really.
Yeah, I did know they played in Faro actually, only because I've got a good friend who was staying in southern Spain, saw Gibraltar had a home game and thought he'd just nip over to Gibraltar to watch it, and then realised he was in the wrong country.
Yeah, no, I'm actually a Celtic fan, so when Celtic played Lincoln, I was lucky that they played here, so I got to walk over to watch Celtic play Lincoln in the Champions League game, watch them lose. As it turned out, but
well, you know, Celtic don't lose much these days.
No, that's true. Although it was, you know, I wouldn't have got sent over to Glasgow for the return leg if they hadn't lost that one. So in a way, it's quite good that they did. So it worked out quite well for me.
Yeah. And what, in terms of your reporting, what's next for the Olive Press?
Probably something about Brexit, I'm guessing. I'm just writing up a big piece for the paper for next week about the sort of events of the last few days. So I'll probably finish that off tonight and then go and have my dinner and then see what happens tomorrow, really. Just, you know, see what comes next. God knows what will happen next in this whole saga. But it's been a pretty crazy few days.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.